I think a lot of people, we live in a world where we get so much gratification, so much dopamine that we expect to live on these elevated levels. But going to the gym and putting yourself through shit, going for the run and running through that, I mean, I excuse my language, but I call it the inner bitch.
Yeah,
And I
same.
actually got that from an Andrew Tate video. And it was a point in my life that changed me quite a bit. And I was doing exactly what one of your podcasts says we shouldn't do, which is sit and consume content on an evening before bed. It creates cortisol. And there was a video of Andrew Tate saying, you know, when you kind of, oh, maybe I should get back in bed, or maybe I shouldn't go to the gym today, or maybe I should eat this cake. That is what he calls, and he rightly calls, you're in a bitch.
The Making of a Modern Man, a podcast dedicated to ambitious men who want to unlock the potential from their mind, body, and life. My name's Jack Taylor, and I'm a men's health, performance, and behavior change specialist. I believe that every man has the potential for greatness. Most just don't know how to unlock it. And that is the intention of this podcast, to help you step into your power and become the man you've dreamt of being. So if you're now ready to elevate all areas of your life, let's dive in. What's up, guys, and welcome back. Today's episode is with Kieran Harris. Kieran is a serial entrepreneur. He set up a business when he was 21 and got it into a brilliant place over the next couple of years, only for it to all come crumbling down when he was 25. This led to him getting a job in corporate and feeling depressed. In this episode, we talk about the rise of Kieran's second business and how he got it to such a successful place. We also end up talking about how to navigate family life and relationships as a business owner, as well as Kieran's personal philosophy for success. I hope you enjoy it, folks. Let's dive in. Kieran, run me through an overview of your life up until this point. You've got a really interesting journey that I'm keen to hear about in more detail, and I know the audience will be as well. And I think it's a great place for us to start by looking at what has actually brought you to this point of where you're at today. So just give as, I guess, like an overarching view, a 50,000 foot view of what we can expect from you and where you've gained this wisdom.
Yeah, so I think I've always been one who learns the hard way. I think as a younger man, as a younger teen, I couldn't be told. You know, I had to make the mistakes myself. I just wouldn't listen to people, which obviously it's different now. I take everyone's view into account. But obviously I left school. I was a bit of a bad lad in school. Not really bad, but, you know, just getting there. And I just decided I wanted to be successful, kind of set in my mind what I wanted to achieve. Started boxing for discipline. Started the Territorial Army for discipline. Because I had more back than bite back then. decided, you know, I was going to be an entrepreneur. I was going to be wealthy. I've always had this underarching desire to be wealthy, and I don't know where it comes from, if I'm honest. I think seeing my dad work really hard kind of made me want to do something for myself. So yeah, left school, started a gas engineering apprenticeship, bumped into my wife, or my girlfriend at the time at 17, and kind of thought, right, well, you know, I think when you find the right one, I was wise enough at that age to think I'm not going to find this again, or possibly not. So I ended up settling down with her. Got my gas engineering apprenticeship. I was working with my dad, and I was just not happy. He was holding me back, false promises, X, Y, Z. So when I turned 21, I got married that year, had my first child that year, bought my first house that year, renovated it, sold it, and used that money to set up my first business, which was a kitchen and bathroom showroom. So one of the things I was thinking was, look, my dad's got a plumbing and heating business. How can I not compete with him? So I thought, well, great, kitchens and bathrooms, we can supplement each other. You know, I can pass him work, he can pass me work. And it worked really well, mate. It worked really well. I worked 7 days a week for 2.5 years. You know, I was hitting the gym in the early days. So I was keeping fit. And it grew like crazy, man. It grew. We doubled it every year. Doubled turnover, doubled revenue. But I was very inexperienced, very, very inexperienced. And I'd built a monster that kind of ate me alive, really, chewed me up and spat me out. So that business, we had to liquidate in 2018. Going through liquidation was one of the best things I ever did. And at the time, I knew it was a good life lesson, but it was very, very painful to live through. But the lessons that have come out of that liquidation, at a young age, I actually genuinely see as a blessing. I'm actually blessed to have experienced that at a very young age, to have those life lessons come and smack me in the face. And for me to have the time of losing everything, you suddenly have all the time in the world. So I did nothing but contemplate and meditate and contemplate. I lost family, I lost friends. Everyone was slandering me online because, bearing in mind, I was 22 years old. I was living in a 3-bed, brand new build detached house. I had 2 Audis on the drive, one for me, one for my wife. And life was good, man. I was loving life. But I didn't realize that everyone around me was like secretly green with envy, you know? So that was one thing that really came out from that. But yeah, so going through that, I learned a lot about people. I learned a lot about business. I learned a lot about managing money. I learned a lot about managing people. I went into a couple of jobs in sales, and I got to learn about big business, how businesses run. Like I was this annoying guy who would just walk into a department that I have no right being there. And I would pull up a chair next to a random employee and ask them all about the department. How's it work? How do they incentivize you? You know, how much do you get paid? What does your role entail? And I think people would just see, I was suit and tie, so I'd just turn up in the bar. I must be important. I'd just sit down and be like, hi, I'm Kieran. Nice to meet you. And one of the things I got from my job was just great experience, because I'd only ever worked for my dad or for myself. So in lockdown hits 2020, I'm in a sales role. I didn't realize how much working in that shark corporate environment where I constantly had to walk on eggshells to avoid being sacked and micromanagement, I didn't realize how much that was changing me as a person. And I was becoming a bit of a dick, basically, to my family. Mostly because obviously I'd not really got much friends at that point. People had walked away from me. And lockdown hit, I'm on furlough, and all of a sudden I get to know my family. For the first time, bearing in mind I have 4 kids at this point, four children. My first son, was born the week we liquidated the business, but that's another story. So yeah, you know, I've got 3 kids, sorry, wife's pregnant, lockdown kicks in, and I have about a month of really struggling at home, decompressing, decompressing, decompressing. And then I start to think, hang on a minute, I don't actually know these kids. I don't know who they are. I don't know my wife. You know, I'm just this guy who turns up on an evening and goes out in the morning and pays the bills. And that really started to shift my perspective on life. So yeah, I had a great time in lockdown, you know, taking the kids out for walks every day. I landscaped the garden at home. I had the kids on the digger with me. You know, I'm not saying I'm experienced in it, but I give it a good go. And it was nice. And it gave me a lot of time to think. And sorry, forgive me if I'm talking more than I should be. But in that thinking time, it made me realize, you know, what's important in life. And it also made me realize just how much I hated the job I was in. And the jobs I took were both high pressure, high pay. And that was because I was in a hole and I needed to get myself out. But I kind of realized, you know, I don't need to be in survival mode anymore, you know, and going through the lessons of learning about money and being better with money, I didn't really need to be earning as much money. And I used to talk to a friend of mine. I was a rep on the road. So I was always on the road, hours and hours a day. And a friend of mine was a stair lift engineer. And he would be up and down the country. So we'd be on the phone all the time. And he hated his job, I hated mine. So we had lots in common. And he would tell me all about the traits of his employer, the way they treat the staff, the way they treat the customers. And obviously, still, if you're dealing with the elderly, you're dealing with vulnerable. Like, for me, I was like, that's just not right. Like, the way they treat their people is not right. Like, I wouldn't want that company in my grandma's house. And they were making some big changes in lockdown to their business model, which meant he was going to be away from home Monday to Friday. And he was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he was there because the money was good. And no one else in the industry is paying anywhere near what this company was paying. And I said to him, right, mate, I'm going to set up a startup company. I'm going to do the marketing. I'm going to do this and that. So I'm going to go out whilst I'm on furlough and sell the stairlifts for you. And you're going to go fit them on a weekend. So he was like, right, fine, we'll do it. Let's do it. So I built the website myself on Wix. Because of COVID, there was loads of kind of Google and Bing were offering free money, like 500 quid a grand for advertisement. So I took that, did some Google ads and some Bing ads. I had no idea what I was doing. No idea, but I just watched some videos, kind of, you know, wing it. Managed to sell a stairlift, made a nice little bit of profit on it. Joe went and fit it on a weekend. I then put that money straight back into ads, you know, going and going and going. To the point where Joe was like, listen, mate, like, I just cannot work any more weekends. Like, you're killing me. I was like, that's fine. Leave your job. So he was like, oh, you know, that's scary. And obviously, he's a good friend of mine. I always knew he had it in him. You know, you just meet people, you're like, this guy's got something. So I just said, what do you need to leave? He said, I need a commitment of this much a month. And I said, right, well, I'll do it. Because I was earning very good money. And because I was on furlough, all my sales commission was still rolling in from the months prior.
Right.
So I was like, let's do it. And my dad's got his plumbing and heating business. So I said to my dad, like, have you got a spare van we can nick? So he was like, yeah, take this van. So Joe was driving around in a plumbing and heating van, all sticking up plumbing and heating. And we just hit the town. We just got going. But that man worked for 6 months like a dog, like, you know, day in, day out with my guidance. And obviously my business acumen helped us honestly. We just came out of nowhere and we were cleaning up where other stairlift companies weren't turning certain stones that we were without giving too much away, which was just an absolute key to success. So 6 months go by, we bought a van cash. That's how successful we've been. We bought it cash because obviously we're very limited in overheads. Give my dad his van back, give him some cash towards the wear and tear and so on. And my boss rings me and says, Kieran, you're back in on Monday. And I just said, listen, mate, I said, I can't see your face again. And he laughed because he hated me as much as I hated him. And he said, what are you telling me? I said, I'm never fucking coming back. Excuse my language. And he said, are you leaving with immediate effect then? I said, yeah. He says, right then, mate, no worries. And I bought a van 2 years ago, like a week and a bit ago, and went out on the road, learned everything you need to know about stairlifts. I was selling them, repairing them, fitting them, just went out and learned it. And me and Joe doubled the company in the next 6 months together. Since then, we've built the company to, it's on track and it's this year to do 2.5 million revenue. We've got 7 engineers, a telesales guy. Joe is now operations. We're still growing, so we've done it in a short space of time, and then in that time I've also set up a property investment business. So I tried investing in property myself, but the one thing I've come to realize is that if you are a cash rich person, most people make the money in business, and then property investment is a great vehicle for those who have cash, whereas everyone's out there trying to make it leveraging debt. It's treacherous. It's not impossible, but it's treacherous. And it's a slow, slow game, so it's not for me. So one thing I realized was that actually there is a great pocket there for trustworthy people to be a intermediary between the investors and the deals. So I source property investments as well. I don't really work in my stairlift business anymore, so obviously I've got more free time. So I do a bit of that. And I'm also pulling another friend out of a job and setting up a car sales business for him to get him out of a dealership. He's miserable. He's unhappy. He's not earning enough money. So I see it as my God-given gift to help those around me who deserve it, you know. So we're getting him going now as well.
Awesome, man. I love that. And I think like the reason why I wanted you to really like dive into that journey, because there's so many twists and turns in and amongst all of that. And even just like sat here now, I can already start to highlight certain trends that are happening and uniqueness to the way that you've approached your journey up until this point and the challenges that have been faced and you've been faced with. And one of the things that I really like to go through for the benefit of us both, but also the audience as well, off the back of like hearing that, is having a look into one, the biggest lessons that you've learned as a result of going through that whole journey, but I guess then tying that into, as a result of those lessons, what you feel like the key traits are to becoming a high achieving and high successful man. Because you see this everywhere, right? You see the studies and stats that have ran that any millionaire that like goes broke, as the saying is, and liquidates or goes bankrupt, they find that they're able to make a million again very, very quickly and very easily, because it's a framework. It's a framework to follow, and there's a certain set of key principles that need to be followed in order to achieve success. And I think that's a way that I like to look at success and high achievement as well, is almost like operationalizing it and using it as principles and frameworks, rather than us thinking that it's solely based on luck or it's solely based on just chance and us winging it. I think if we reflect on our own personal like journeys, and we'll do that with yours, you're able to extract what are the key principles from this, what are the major lessons and takeaways that I can like take from this. I would imagine you've done that yourself anyway, because of the way you view your journey and your challenges, but I think it'll be great for other people to start to pick your brain, have a look inside your brain as to how you view it. So there's a lot to kind of unpack in that journey. It sounds like a film as well, your own personal journey. It's just like
honestly, yeah. I was the only person who stood by me when everything went wrong was my father-in-law. Now, me and him have never seen eye to eye, not in a bad way. It's just he's a very different mindset and upbringing to me. So we've never really agreed on much. But he was the first person on the phone when everything went wrong. How can I help? What can I do to help you? I'm getting goosebumps telling you.
That a surprise?
It was a massive surprise. Massive surprise. But he said to me, he was like, listen, mate. Like, you have achieved more in your 20s than most men achieve in their working life. And he was like, you need to write a book called 40 Before 30. So it's something I'm looking into, and I'm going to dedicate it to him, and I want it to be there. He's 65 now, so he's still got, and he's very fit and healthy. He'd be a great guy on your podcast because he's so active. He cycles, climbs. They go mountaineering, everything.
Awesome.
But I'd like to get that done so he can have the chance to read it and see it's dedicated to him before he gets too old.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I guess like for, I would imagine a key structure of that book as well would be like what the take home points are from your journey, right? How you've been able to achieve more before the age of 30 than what most people do before the age of 40. So we can use today as a way of you fleshing that out.
Yeah, definitely. Let's do it.
Chapter one, right? What would you say one of the key pillars to success has been for you, or takeaways?
Yeah, so I want to quote Winston Churchill, and I've got it on my wall here. And success consists of going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. And I've had that on my wall for years and years. I'm a big Churchill fan. I smoke Churchill cigars. You know, I think the guy's a G. I relate to him a lot in a way, because he was kind of a madman. He thought out of the box and people thought it was a bit weird. That's kind of me. but he was also very kind of, no, this is how I'm thinking. I don't care what other people think. This is the way we need to go. And that man made some big decisions that was frowned upon amongst many. And if those decisions went wrong, his head would have been on a chopping block, but he still went with them. So that's why I wanted to start with quoting Winston Churchill. I think roll with the punches. You've got to just keep going, keep going, keep going. And like when friends kind of consoling me a little bit and kind of complain about life, everyone's allowed to do that. You know, I'll do it from time to time. But I think you've just got to take it. Like life is a rolling, consistent punch in the face. And you've just got to enjoy the gaps between the next fist.
Yeah, 100%. You have to almost like fall in love with that process. And I think the perfect analogy, which is such an old adage, right, is that it's the climb up the mountain that is the part that's enjoyable, as opposed to when you reach the summit. Like you get to the summit, you're taking the view for a period of time, and then it just becomes the norm. It's like, cool, I've seen this now, and we become dissatisfied or bored. So I'm a big believer in this for like men in particular. There's a really great book that dissects this called The Way of the Superior Man by David Daida. And he basically says that it is that process of like men living close to their edge and almost being on the front line, being in the battlefield, like literally and figuratively, that is what lights men up. And that's where you ultimately want to try and position yourself on a daily basis, is what is my battlefield? And I think business is obviously such a great vehicle for that, because there is always a problem and there's always a challenge that you have to ever face. That's life, isn't it? Whether it be a customer or client or an operation that's not working well, like there is always a problem to solve. And it's in the face of like your own personal problems that need to be solved where like growth is held. And you can only find those on that climb as opposed to the summit.
And here's the thing as well, Jack, and the better you get at it, the easier it becomes. So then you start facing bigger, harder hitters, because you're thinking, and you do, I'm so bad for it. I love getting stuck in. I've always been a gritty kind of guy. And then when things start going really well, I'm like, you know, so I'm always looking for another challenge.
It's so easy to. Like, you constantly, when you achieve new goals, if we view comfort zone like a perimeter in a circle, when you achieve a new milestone or a goal, it's because you've reached the edge of that comfort zone and you've like dipped your toes over the edge. And what that does is that just increases the perimeter of that comfort zone. And then you're back in the middle again. And it's so easy to then just stay there and be like, well, I've done it once. Awesome. I've achieved this accolade. But now we need to recognize that you're in the middle of a new comfort zone. So it's like, seeking the edge and living closer to your edge again. And like you say, tackling bigger bosses, if you want to gamify it. And expanding that perimeter again. It's in that constant expansion of the perimeter that before you know it, that perimeter of comfort is so large that tasks that maybe right now you're looking at as being like quite fearful or overwhelming, or ones that make you feel uncomfortable, become second nature. Guys, just a quick one. I really appreciate you hopping in here and listening to these episodes each and every week. I try and fill these with as much value as possible to give you the tools to be able to transform not only your mind and your body, but ultimately your life. Now, I just want to ask a very quick favor from yourself. If you could spend 10 seconds to just leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to, then that would mean the world to me. But more importantly, it might actually be able to change the world of someone else. And if that wasn't enough, at the end of every month, I'm going to be choosing one person from those who have reviewed for a free coaching call. Thank you, and back to the show.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the problem, is the sharper you get, the more experienced you become, the easier things become. And I have learned more now as well, just to kind of enjoy it. And I was kind of contemplating on it, because I contemplate a lot. And I genuinely, I'm not promoting unhealthy lifestyle, but I genuinely think cigars are a great way to kind of slow your mind down, because you have an hour with you and that cigar. Mm-hmm. So you're not moving anywhere. You're not going anywhere. And I genuinely contemplate quite heavily while smoking a cigar. And it's kind of I don't do it very often, maybe once a month. Much prefer to do it with a friend and talk business. But that's kind of where I've started to manage to think, well, actually, the way to stay away from, because a lot of guys don't realize this, but you reach your goals and you'll find yourself miserable. And there's plenty of content and books about it. And I went through it quite hard in my early 20s. And now I'm sat there and I'm thinking, wow, I said 2 years ago, this is where I want to be. And like, Jack, I mean, I'm not bragging, but I slept in this morning. I had nothing to get out of bed for apart from this podcast. And I'm going to, I was going to go to the gym. I woke up, legs are killing from training legs yesterday. I thought, do you know what? I'm going to have a coffee, go back to bed for half an hour. When the coffee kicks back in, I'll wake up. And it's too late to go to the gym now because I need to jump on this. So I'll take the kids to school. I went and had a coffee, made some calls, jumped to this podcast. Like, I dreamed of that. I've gone from working 15-hour days. I built something, got myself to this plateau. So I was kind of contemplating on that, and I think gratitude is one of the highest frequencies we can operate on. And so I try and, you know, bro, I was on the treadmill, right, in the gym, and I was looking at my legs in the mirror, and I was like, I am so grateful that right now I have the ability to run on these legs.
I completely get it. I've had something very similar where I was out on a run, and I hate running, so even more profound. I was out on a run, and I saw somebody who was in a wheelchair, and I was like, I was sat there in my mind being like, oh, it sucks, and fuck, I don't want to be doing this. And then I ran past them, and I was just completely changed the lens of which I was looking through, and just had this deep sense of like joy and gratitude for even just being able to do that thing. And it changed.
That guy in that wheelchair, that man or woman would kill.
100%.
Would kill to be on your feet.
100%. So completely, I must have been about 18 at the time, and it completely reframed how I viewed like my own personal challenges. And when I found myself like moaning about my woes, it really was a catalyst moment for me to practice gratitude like on a daily basis. It's something that I do on a daily basis. Super important, man. Yeah. Super important.
Something as well is just on the traits is, and you hear this all the time. Now this, I feel like I've got a good edge on this. Now everyone says surround yourself with the right people. And when you hear that and you start to understand its importance, you're like, oh, well, shit, how am I going to find these people? You know, where are they going to come from? And I've been thinking like this for years, and slowly but surely I meet the occasional person. I met a friend not that long ago. I mean, we became very close very quickly. Who are on the same wavelength as you. And you kind of, I catch people now. If my family or friends have been negative, I'll just tell them, you've been negative. But then on the same sentence, if I start doing it, they catch me. So you almost start to pull each other up then.
Yeah.
And it's keeping that gratitude framework in your mind. I think that is a massive, massive trait of self-awareness. Don't allow others to move your core. You know, don't let other things push you around. Like, you know, if someone pisses you off, someone says something you don't agree with, someone brings gossip your way, you have a bump in the road in business, it doesn't matter. Keep your core, stay controlled, and it's so much easier to navigate the world. If you allow people to push and pull your emotions and your mental state, you'll just be what I call a drifter. You'll be drifting through the universe, and other people will be using their force to, you know, basically pull you around.
100%.
So that's one big trait. And in that self-awareness is, you know, gratitude. Be thankful for everything you've got, you know, and you'll find gratitude in the smallest of things. And when you get to that state, you genuinely are more happy. So, you know, and if you're not kind of grateful for where you are at the minute and you know you want to be somewhere else, then realistically, just get to work. Shut the hell up and get on with it.
Action is, yeah, definitely what alleviates that and creates movement. Just to that, I know we spoke about it before we hopped on air as well. Something that I want to dissect is, I think it's really interesting that core, like having that unwavering core and being grounded in every situation. We spoke to, prior to hopping on here, that coming from like a place of spirituality, like monks obviously talk about it in a lot of like Buddhism books, where it's having this unwavering central point that, like you say, that we don't deviate from. You gave the example earlier, if someone gives you the V's while you're driving, you don't become super hyped up and angry. If somebody does you wrong, again, you're aware of it, but you don't deviate too far from your center. For you, where did you come across that originally? And what have you done to almost like strengthen that as a practice for yourself?
Yeah, so the spiritual journey, I've been on a large journey of spirituality. And just on a random note, one thing that annoys me with it is the higher you elevate, you kind of, and in a spiritual sense, you kind of leave a lot of people behind. And then you find that you kind of don't like being around certain people because you're, but anyways, that's another thing for another podcast, surely. But when everyone turned on me, and, you know, everyone couldn't wait to kick me whilst I was down. And, you know, my staff were that sort of, my old staff were kind of going online and setting up fake Facebook profiles and saying I'd scam them as customers and stuff because they were frightened I was going to set up the business again without them, which shows the kind of people they were. And I kind of went really internal, really, really internal. And I was like, it just made me realize how much of a bad judge of character I really was on a lot of people. I did a lot of self-reflecting and then obviously went into the sales roles, kind of didn't do much, cracked on. And then we move on into lockdown. And again, I was trapped in the house with a pregnant wife and three children. My daughter's autistic and my son has ADHD. So they're very hard to be around if they're not kind of being stimulated in some way. Or so, you know, I can't even tell you the stress of not being able to escape them. It's not their fault, but, you know, when you're in the house with them all day, every day, you know, that was one of the biggest life lessons I've ever been through because I was struggling so bad with my mental health. I wanted nothing more than to jump out of a window and somehow grow wings and fly away. And I hate admitting that. And it's not because I don't love them. It's just because I wasn't getting a break from them. And obviously up until that point, I'd been at work all the time. So I really kind of started consuming a lot of content online. So I was really kind of, getting rid of anything negative. So if Facebook, you know, you can tick, I don't like this, same on Instagram. I was depressed, but not what people, I don't believe in depression as it is. I say that with a caveat as, I believe in depression is just your body saying to you, I'm not happy about something, we need to change. And, you know, I'll openly admit to you now, Jack, that if I watched something slightly dramatic on TV that involved conflict or sadness, it made me feel really sad. So that's how susceptible I was to those sorts of things. So I wouldn't let my wife watch any soaps on TV because it was just like bad vibes. I'm like, I don't need that shit in my house. I only watched comedies. I only watched documentaries. I was reading books about positivity and manifestation and all this stuff. And it just kind of snowballs. I'm sure you've been, if you're into spirituality, you've been through a very similar journey. But you come out the other side and you start to be so much more self-aware. And that's kind of where it all came from, really, from being in such a dark place and being a kind of man who was self-aware already. His own biggest self-critic already, you know, I was like, I need to get myself out of this. There's no one's going to come to the rescue. You know, I need to figure out why I'm in this place and how I can get myself out of it.
Yeah, 100%. And like you say, I've been through a very similar process and journey with my own spirituality and diving into that world as a whole. And I think you're spot on as well, is that if we don't bring awareness to how we're currently feeling, and there's somebody who's listening to this who is currently in a place where they're not feeling great, they're feeling low, they're, if we use the term, like vibrating at a low frequency, right? So they're on the fear, guilt, shame area or despair, some of which we could call having like environmental depression, where actually it's our lifestyle and our circumstances that are making us feel depressed. Because again, depressed is a feeling, right? It's similar to being ecstatic. There is depression where it's clinically depressed and whatnot, where we have hormone imbalances. However, 90% of depression is circumstantial, environmental and lifestyle based. And I think if we bring awareness to how we're feeling, we want to then recognize that if I'm in that space, I am super susceptible to like absorbing more of the same. So absorbing from other people, more of their baggage, their shit, their lower frequency, their negativity. And likewise, people often gravitate towards soaps and programs that are filled with negativity and like reality TV. I can't stand it. It is full of like cheating. It's full of gossiping. It's full of fighting. It's full of people with like low values and low morals and a lack of integrity, and what you're absorbing all of that without even realizing. And then that changes the way that you view the world, that changes your experience. And sometimes it reaffirms how you're feeling. And that's not what you want. Like you say, you want to be aware of that, understand that I'm actually in quite a vulnerable place right now. So I need to be really vigilant with what I'm consuming. Like, it's your information diet. It's not just the diet that you put in your mouth. And yeah, I think like you say, you changed up your information diet, which no doubt like is a fast track way to getting yourself out of that place.
100%. And just touching on two things you're saying there about diet and vibrational frequencies. I think when you talk about vibrational frequencies, a lot of people think you're a weirdo. And I see it all the time. I have to try and curb myself sometimes because I realize the average man thinks it does, you know, it's stupid and we're just humans and we're just here. But I've even gone to the depth of looking into scientific studies around vibrational frequencies of food, clothes. And it's insane, man. And I've started eating so much more fruit, right? And I've always been told by my personal trainer, sugars, you're going to get fat. Don't do it. I have 100% noticed in the last 2 months from drinking fresh fruit juice and eating fruit that I feel so much happier. Sometimes I catch myself and I think, wow, I feel really happy right now. And I genuinely think it's awesome. And I've started washing my fruit properly. So I'd wash it in white vinegar, water and baking powder. It foams up, and in the bottom, you get like old bits and sometimes worms that have bust out of the fruit and gone to the bottom. It's crazy, but your fruit will taste insane. If you haven't tried it, bro, try it. It's insane.
I've never tried that.
Honestly, you know, grapes are really waxy and like the skin kind of just doesn't really chew very well. Once you wash them in that, you'll never 2 cups of water, 1 cup of white vinegar. You can get like 5 liters on Amazon and a good old serving of baking powder. Give it a stir. It'll foam up. Kind of like strawberries and grapes, 2 minutes, but raspberries and things like that are a bit more soft, just 30 seconds. Drain them off, give them a good rinse. Your fruit will taste amazing.
It's funny, isn't it? There's so much that's added to them, like with apples, for example.
Pesticide.
Yeah, like even like apples have got like wax on them, and it's all obviously to preserve their shelf life. But the reality is, like, last Sunday we went to a farm and picked our own fruit and veg. And when you've picked like fresh fruit like and veg yourself, you see how short of a shelf life it has, which then begs the question of, when you go to Tesco's and there's something that's sat on that shelf, you know that's been in Tesco's on that shelf for probably 2 days. How long has it been out the back? How long has it been in transport? Like, how long ago was it that it was actually picked? Which then begs the question of, why is it still
consuming?
Is it still in a place that I can eat it? So yeah,
this is what a lot of people don't realize. This is what frightens me, Jack. And this is something that I'm kind of hammering home with my family at minute, my kids, is that as humans now, everything is toxic. Everything, the frequencies in the air, the TV we consume, the food we put in our mouths, the water we drink. So water's full of fluoride, which if you look into it, calcifies the part of your brain, the pineal gland, which is our third eye, which kind of helps us vibrate out into the world. If you think I'm a weirdo, I don't care. Go look into it, you know. So I don't drink tap water. I try and avoid my kids drinking it. It's quite hard to get given it at school. I've stopped them eating McDonald's. They hate me for it, but we do not eat McDonald's. Because I noticed if I ate a McDonald's, I felt miserable after. So we don't eat McDonald's anymore. I try and feed them more wholesome foods. And it just changes. It changes everything. So diet, you're right. Who you hang around with, who are you consuming your time with, what are you consuming with your eyes? Obviously, you know, the things you see and what you're consuming with your mouth, they're three big factors that I learned, and that's how I got myself out of the pit we were just talking about. And vibrational frequencies, like you say. So what emotions keep us low? What emotions make us high? And I think you've got to realize that. I think a lot of people, we live in a world where we get so much gratification, so much dopamine that we expect to live on these elevated levels. But going to the gym and putting yourself through shit, going for the run and running through that. I mean, excuse my language, but I call it the inner bitch. And so, I actually got that from an Andrew Tate video. And it was a point in my life that changed me quite a bit. And I was doing exactly what one of your podcasts says we shouldn't do, which is sit and consume content on an evening before bed. It creates cortisol. And there was a video of Andrew Tate saying, you know, when you kind of, oh, maybe I should get back in bed, or maybe I shouldn't go to the gym today, or maybe I should eat this cake. That is what he calls, and he rightly calls, you're in a bitch. And that flicked a switch in my head. And I got up that morning and I was fat. My testosterone was low. I was miserable. I was stood at the edge of my bed, about to go to the gym. And I was thinking, oh, should I get back in bed? Oh, I feel like shit. Oh, my body's aching. And I was like, no. I hope you don't mind me swearing. But like, fuck you. To myself, like, stop being such a little bitch. Put on your gym clothes and go to the gym. And then if you start your internal dialogue to talk to yourself that way, you'll find that you don't even need to talk to yourself anymore after a while. It just became the norm. And I said it to you when we discussed on WhatsApp. I used to think, oh, well, I've not had three meals today, or I've not consumed enough water today, or I've got a bit of a headache, or I feel a bit sick. I won't go to the gym. Whereas now, if I haven't eaten, I haven't slept, I haven't drunk water, I've been really busy, I'm tired, I still go to the gym. There's not even any sort of internal dialogue against it. It's like, right, I've missed the gym when I thought I was going to go. Now I'm going to go this time. There's no, oh, I'll just skip it.
Yep. And it's so important. There's David Goggins talks about this in his book, Can't Hurt Me, which I read a good few years ago. And he coined as well the term of like his inner bitch. And that's a fantastic audio book. If nobody's listened to it, I would 100% listen to it, because he narrates it as well, and he's really like motivating, and he's great. Yeah, he's great at whipping people into shape, that's for sure. And yeah, he basically talks about that, and I think it's right as well, is that what a lot of people do, just to talk to that point, is that part of themselves that we obviously call our inner bitch, they haven't detached from that yet. So they have still a level of attachment to it. So if that part of themselves is like, oh, I can't be arsed today, we've had a shit night's sleep, let's just not go, they haven't yet detached from it. And I think by calling it your inner bitch, or calling it something else, you can even give it a funny name to create humor out of it. By calling it your inner bitch, or poison parrot is another one someone said recently, you're detaching from that part of yourself, which then makes it easier to have that communication, that internal dialogue, to override that voice. And because we all have it, we all have that inner bitch inside of us. And obviously, going back to that perimeter of comfort that I was talking about earlier, it just crops up at different points. So for me, a big personal challenge that I've overcome recently is public speaking. So I did a public speaking gig in the corporate world, which was really great. And that was something that my inner bitch had always told me to avoid, and just created this catastrophic event that would naturally ensue if I did it. And in those moments, I had to recognize who's at the wheel. And by creating that level of detachment from my inner bitch, if I heard that part of myself creep in, I could go, cool, he's currently at the wheel, so I need to override him and take back the wheel. Whereas if you don't create that detachment and almost name it, you can't distinguish between the two. So you associate yourself with that inner bitch, and you believe that's you. So you then operate from that space. If he starts saying, oh, Kieran, like, you've had a rough night's sleep, let's fuck the gym off this morning, you'll go, yeah, you know what? I have, and I deserve this. I deserve to just like not go. And then it becomes a really slippery slope, because you're then conditioning yourself to skip twice, to create the habit of not doing things because you can't be bothered. So it's the reverse of that, which we're obviously looking to create, is overriding that voice and showing to yourself over a prolonged period of time that you are in control and not that inner bitch.
So I've got a guy who works for me, a great guy called Reese. He's one of my first employees, and he, you know, young family like me, needs plenty of cash. He likes to work a lot of overtime. And he kind of saw me and was like, wow, you know, you've really got in shape, you know, how have you managed it? You know, he said to me, I don't know, I'm going to have a time. And this guy can work 14-hour days some days. You know, it's crazy. And I was like, listen, Reese, I was like, I have a busy life. I've got, you know, a couple of kids with additional needs. I've got, you know, busy home life. I've got businesses. I've got this. So, but I never, ever missed the gym. And I'm like, you know, I even installed a microwave in my van, which cost me a grand. just so I could pull over and heat up chicken and rice. And if I'd not brought food with me, instead of going to Greg's or anything, I'd go and get a ready meal, like a kind of healthy-ish ready meal from a petrol station or something, you know, like in the freezer section. And I said to him, you're not going to be able to do it perfect, but if you truly want to lose weight and you truly have had enough of your own shit, you'll find a way. So then Reese recently has lost a lot of weight. So he drives all over the country, literally hundreds of miles a day. He signed up to a gym chain where you can go into the gyms across the country. So he will leave his house at 4 a.m. He lives in like Huddersfield. So let's say he's got a job in London. He will drive till like 9 a.m., go to one of these gyms, clock off. I give my guys that flexibility. So he clocks off, goes into the gym for an hour, comes out of the gym, clocks back in, drives to work. The man's killing it. And now he's started making food for himself. And he has looked at his situation, which most people wouldn't even survive in, working 12, 14-hour days, but he's got grit. And then he's gone, right, how can I do this? Right, well, I've got the flexibility to clock in and out when I want. Right, so that means I can train whenever I want. Right, well, if I set off later in the day, I'm going to be too late to get to my first job, so I'm going to get home late. Right, well, if I sign up to these gyms that I can go around the country, I can drive 4 hours and then go to that gym. So he's done it. If you want to achieve it, you can. And what was nice for me was just having that one conversation with him was enough to trigger in his mind, well, actually, I can achieve this as well. You know, because he came to me like, oh, I don't know how you do it. I was like, Reese, if you want to do it, mate, you'll do it. And he was like, you're right.
And that is such a, it sounds so simple, right? But it's such an important almost like framework to follow and philosophy to follow as well, is that we want to be solution orientated rather than problem orientated. And I say that the majority 100%. Of people are heavily problem orientated, which is that I don't have enough time, this is going to be difficult, and they just sit in that space of becoming acutely aware of what their problems are. And we want to flip that on its head and start to strategize as to, actually, I'm aware that this is a challenge that I'm facing, but I get my clients to do this, is to like brainstorm every possible way in which that you could provide a solution to that problem. Some of them will be ridiculous and a lot of them aren't going to work or be feasible. However, you only need one to work. And that's the important thing, is that if you strategize 10 different ways in which to solve a problem, one of them is more than likely going to be the answer that at least is going to take you away from where you are right now. And it is so important, because again, using that time complaint as an issue, everybody's strapped for time. I would say the majority of people who are listening to this podcast are not going to be sat twiddling their thumbs like in vacant idle time after work now, or at least if they are, I'm assuming they're listening because they want to become a high achiever and a high performer and they want to not do that. We cannot buy any more time back. Like, the reality is we need to be sleeping for 6 to 8 hours a day if you want to become a high achiever, because if you don't, like, you can kiss any chance of that goodbye, because your energy levels dictate everything. So that's gone. So we are all given a certain set of time. We cannot buy any more time back. Now, the thing that's important is it's often not a time issue. It's a time allocation issue. So we need to figure out, where am I allocating time to things that will serve me less than what I'm actually wanting to allocate time to? And more often than not, 90% of the time, it's the task that we're not even aware we're spending time doing. So if somebody ever comes up to me and says, I don't have time, awesome, get your phone out. Let's have a look at average screen time across the week. If that is
I was just going to say the exact same thing.
Yeah, if that's
if
over
you
2 hours.
TV, you have too much time.
And I'm not disputing the fact that we need downtime and we need time to be connected and we need time to relax and unwind. However, again, it's a time allocation. If you're in a position currently where you are not happy or you're not achieving the results you want in life, and you're fed up and you're pissed off with that fact, and you are saying you don't have time, you need to look at time allocation. Is me spending an hour, let's just say, stay on the context, in the gym, going to serve me more than spending an hour watching TV? If the answer is yes, then you have a time allocation problem.
Yeah. And Jack, just to add to that, if you don't mind, just to touch on something, when you talk about my traits to success, one of them is no to rest. Like you said, we do need to rest, but it's how you rest. It's what you do. You know, for me now, it's I'll focus on how can I improve my diet? How can I sleep better? How, you know, what am I doing wrong? Listening to content like yours, such as I didn't know. One of my biggest problems at the moment is cortisol. So even though I'm losing weight, I'm struggling with my belly fat. It's because I've got a very stressful life. So I've been trying to reduce my cortisol, and I didn't realize consuming, I haven't looked at social media all day. So I get in bed, I think, I'll watch some videos and chill a little bit. So that's something that I've changed from that. If you're listening to this podcast, go back and listen to the podcast Jack's done on losing body fat. The tips you put in there are not only just for losing weight, they're for a healthy lifestyle.
100%.
And you touched on being pissed off with yourself. You've got to get sick of your own shit. Like, if you want things to change, you know, it has to happen. I think that's if you just accept your life is what it is, you're never going to get anywhere.
Absolutely. And I think this is another really important point and thing that I actually got my newsletter, which is going out on Monday, spoke about this around like anti-goals and agitating pain. As humans, we are far more motivated by pain than we are by pleasure. So the idea of escaping pain and discomfort does motivate someone a lot more. So if I put a gun to your head, you'd be significantly more motivated than if I gave you the chance to win X amount of money, which we can lean into. Agitate pain. Like, if you are aware that, you know what, I'm in a position where I don't like where I am, but I'm actually finding it really difficult to like get myself up and go, and that motivation, it's quite easy for some people to fall into a victim mindset or that feeling of hopelessness and apathy where it's like, life shit, what's the point in even trying? Agitate your pain. And
yeah, I could well have done that. I have got to a point in life where I just cannot stand it. If someone is bitching and moaning to me, I am literally ruthless. I'm literally like, shut the fuck up and do something about it. And then people are kind of like shocked by it. But so my mum's kind of ruthless, yeah? And I was overweight, very overweight. My business was really busy. I was working all hours. I was eating takeaways. I was drinking on the nights for stress. And my mum went, you got really fat. And I kind of went home, looked in the mirror and thought, shit, she's right. I'm so fat. And then I did something about it. And I think we all walk around trying to be nice to each other. And for me, a true friend would say to you, bro, like, you need to sort yourself out. So sorry to just jump in there, but it just triggered something. And something I've been meaning to say, and I wrote it down, but we kind of moved away from it a little bit, is I said this to Reese. I have never, ever, once, ever regretted going to the gym. But I always regret not going.
100%.
Every time.
I think that speaks, like with your mum there as well, that speaks to the importance of having like certain people in your life who will naturally hold you to a higher standard. And I think this is such an integral part of success. There's studies that have shown that even in like a corporate workspace, let's say you've got a big open plan office and you've got people dotted around, if you are sat next to a underperformer, it will decrease your performance by up to 30%.
I saw that study. It's insane.
Yeah. And if you are sat next to a high performer, it can increase your performance by 10 to 15%. So it shows that just being in the vicinity of people who are operating at lower levels, your performance will naturally drop. So that's, again, another thing to just like reinforce how important it is to have the right people around you so that they can hold you to a higher standard. They can call you out on bullshit when it's needed. Because like you say, we are living very much in a society now where everybody's afraid of saying the wrong thing. Everybody's afraid of upsetting one another. And it's come at a cost of people are surrounded by yes men, people are surrounded by comfort, and people are surrounded by others who are too fearful to give them like constructive criticism, to constructive feedback, to like say things from a space of love that is needed to be heard, like to be heard. So I take this approach with all of my clients, and I make this clear at the start of our working relationship, is that I am not going to tell you the things that you want to hear. I'm going to tell you the things that you want, that you need to hear, but it's all coming from a place of love. And it's all because I want to see you do better. And I work with entrepreneurs and executives a lot. And the reality is, because they're top of the food chain in their world, they don't have those type of people to question why they're thinking the way they do, to call them out on bullshit. So I think no matter where you are in your career or where you are in your social circle, you need to have people to hold you accountable and to hold you to a higher standard.
I agree. And a lot of people need to drop their ego. I think one of the lessons I learned going back to my failure is I did have a bit of an ego. I was a bit arrogant, and it was one of the I surrounded myself with venomous yes people that when it all went wrong showed the true colors. You know, the skin was off and the scales were out, you know. Going back again to a point I made about, we all know we should be surrounding ourselves with the right people. You know, these high achievers and stuff, I just want to be, I mean, don't get me wrong, I like having, I have got friends that will never really amount to too much in the business world. They just like the job. They, you know, they're quite happy. I've got nothing wrong with that. You know, as long as their mindset is in the right place. And, you know, if they're happy and content, I've got, you know, that's fine, but they're not also jealous of me wanting to achieve these higher things. I could ring and say, I've just bought this Rolex. I'm like, oh, nice, bro. I love it. You know, come see me. Come show me. I want to try it on. Whereas a lot of people say, I've just bought this Rolex. You know, but, oh, that's nice. And then as soon as you turn your back, like, oh, you know, I don't want to swear. I'm trying to curb my language and be a bit more well-spoken. But you get my point. And these high-achieving men and women that you're speaking to, really, you know, I don't know if it's, I suppose it's a bit of advice from me, you know, not that you need it, is to try and get these people to drop their ego and kind of, this is why I've been so successful this time around in business. It's because the ego is gone and I'm looking at everything from everyone's perspective. So I've been the employer, I've been the employee. I've worked for asshole managers in shithouse companies where everybody's miserable. So when I'm dealing with people, you know, I'm dealing with them on a human basis. So to give you an example, a key member of staff, his wife left him at the beginning of the year. His performance fell off a cliff. Most companies would churn them up and spit them out. Obviously, I guided him through, allowed him the, you know, the space to kind of not really perform. And he's come out the other side. And I said to him, and this is the kind of friend I am, I said, I know you don't want to hear this, and I know you loved her and everything, but I said, I am excited to see the man you become at the other side of this. And I was kind of scared saying that to him. So I thought, I hope he doesn't turn around and be like, oh, you know, screw you. But he does appreciate it. And I had a member of staff go blind when I had a cataract in the same year, right? And he was trying to book holidays for his doctor's appointments. I said, what are you doing? I'm not going to let you use your holidays for doctor's appointments. I said, just go to your doctor's appointment and get back to work when you can. And I think when you start to treat people like human beings, the kind of, I realize being fake and being this kind of, you know, business person, and you become almost a corporation, and human interaction with corporations is clinical. Whereas when you become a human being and you treat people as such, there's so much more connection. And, you know, I talk about this to my ops manager, Joe, sometimes, you know, I'm kind of pulling him with me, and we'll look at something that's really annoyed us about a staff member, but then we'll look at it on the flip coin and go, well, actually, you know, they're working all these hours. They did this for us. They agreed to do that. And it's not all give, you know, there has to be a give and take. So I'm sorry, I've kind of veered off a little bit there, but I thought it was a key point. Something that may help you with clients in the future is, just because we're operating at 100%, you cannot expect the people who work for you to operate at that. And I said this to my staff, if you operate 80%, I know you're giving me 100, because you cannot, otherwise if they were operating at 100, they'd be running their own business.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's such an integral part of like just keeping and maintaining relationships around you, and like being able to, I think it's such a powerful characteristic and trait to have, is putting yourself in someone else's shoes and like trying to set our own ego aside and look at it from their perspective of, okay, how are they currently feeling right now? Where are they operating from? And I think it's so easy for us to only operate from how we're feeling, the place of which where we're at. And if, especially if we're talking business, right? If you're a high achiever and you are the entrepreneur, you already operate from such a different space to other people. So it is important to be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes and get a better understanding as to why have they responded in this way, why they're performing the way they currently are, and then you're able to approach it with a lot more empathy and understanding, which no doubt like nurtures a much better relationship than just wagging the finger and pointing blame.
Exactly. So the first thing we do when a staff member isn't performing is ask them if there's anything we're doing that's affecting their performance. That's the first thing we ask. Is there anything we need to change? Is there anything that's not working that's affecting the way you perform? And if they say no, we'll say, right, well, you know, obviously you don't have to tell us details, but is there anything going on at home or in your personal life that might be affecting your performance at work? More often than not, they'll say yes. And it's like, look, you know, do you want to discuss it? You don't have to, you know, but we're here. Every single time they've opened up, I've got this going on, I've got that going on, da, 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 da. We'll have a little bit of a chit chat about it and we'll say, look, appreciate that shit. You know, we've all been there. You do have a job to do. This is what we need from you at work, but what can we do to try and help you at home? What can we do to kind of help you with that? And one thing we have is an EAP service where people can get counseling for free. There's money advice, gambling advice, relationship advice, you know, everything. If, oh, my dog's died and I'm really upset about it, they can get counseling. And just having that to signpost people to, we never know if they use it, but just to say, look, you know, I'm not, you know, qualified to talk to you about, you know, your problems at home with your wife, but I'm here for you if you want to chat, but here's someone you can speak to, you know, who can really give you advice. And you're right, you do get that. And my staff say it to me, mate, and I believe them. They say it's the best job they've ever had. You know, they work. When I'm recruiting, I say to them, it's going to be the hardest job you've ever had. You're going to work harder than you've ever worked in any other job. You're going to earn way more money than you've ever earned. But you're going to be respected and cared for, you know. And people do come back to me, feedback to me and say, you know, I've never had a job where I feel valued.
Yeah, I think that personal responsibility is important as well. Just as a side note, you mentioned obviously at the start, one of the first questions you ask is, what is it that we can do? What can I do? Is there anything that I am doing to influence how you're feeling? And again, that just speaks to the importance of people taking personal responsibility for themselves and their own actions and what they're doing. And even in those times of conflict, we're so easy to, again, point the blame and put somebody else in a position of wrongdoing. That's their fault. They've done this to me. But with a really great and powerful question to ask is, what is my responsibility in this situation? What role have I played? How have I maybe influenced this to happen? Now, there's a very big difference, as a disclaimer, between personal responsibility and blame and fault. Very big difference. Mm. But I think it helps and serves us to look at what our personal responsibility is in any given situation, because then we can reclaim back control and power over it. If we're just constantly blaming other people, it relinquishes our sense of control and personal power, because we can't do anything about that. Whereas if we start to focus on like adopting a stream ownership and personal responsibility, it allows us to put the ball back in our court a little bit, take a bit more action.
100%. I think as humans, but just from my perspective as a man, I believe it's our responsibility to kind of, you know, I don't know what the term I'm looking for now here, but to kind of be responsible for your own actions. You know, I had a business coach, my first business coach when I was 21, a guy called Rick Armstrong. You know, I kind of had a love-hate relationship with him because I was this annoying, boisterous young man. He was, you know, probably late 50s at that time, made his money, his wife was a surgeon, very respectable guy. So it was funny. And I used to call him Slick Rick and he absolutely fucking hated it. But yeah, Rick Armstrong, he is a part of BNI, you know, the business networking group. So if anyone wants to find him, find him. But, you know, it was one of those guys like Marmite. A lot of people hated him, but I respected him for his knowledge. And he said to me in one of our early sessions, and it stuck with me ever since, was the question you need to ask yourself, if something's happening in your life you're not happy about, what have you done to cause it? And he said, I guarantee you, you will find the answer. I remember walking away from that meeting thinking, what the hell is he talking about? And then I'd start questioning myself, like, what have I done? And then you start realizing, well, shit, maybe if I didn't say things that way, or maybe if I wasn't kind of assertive, or, and even down to my relationship with my wife, you know, marriage is not easy. People give up on it. We have our ups and downs. You know, one week we hate each other and we're fighting. The next week we're cuddling, kissing, and telling each other we love each other. It just happens. So if my wife starts to get kind of, you know, I noticed the vibrations I'm getting from her are changing and she's kind of, you know, not in a good space, I'll start to like kind of think, oh, maybe I could kind of, you know, buy her some flowers, or maybe I could just, you know, compliment her a little bit more, and I can see her self-esteem's a bit low. So, you know, just tell her, no, you look nice today, stuff like that. But then I notice when I do that, actually the relationship dynamic changes and she's a bit happier. So, you know, so many people just flicking into relationships randomly, but, you know, the partner starts to become annoying or whinge all the time or whatever, and then they're just kind of like, oh, fuck you. But then realistically, what are they doing? You know, us men, we see all the jokes about it on Instagram. We throw our clothes next to the wash basket. We leave dirty washing on the side. I'm blessed, Jack, to have a woman who agreed to take care of me. The agreement was, I'll be the entrepreneur, she'll be the homemaker, and that's fine. I'm happy with that. People have different perspectives on life. Good for you. But for me, that was the dynamic we agreed on. And, you know, I'll be honest, I've taken it for granted sometimes. So now I'm, you know, being in tune, honestly, I'm probably going way off here, so forgive me, but, you know, we're really guilty for not listening to what people are saying to us. Whereas now she'll say, oh, it really pisses me off that you do this. And I'll try and catch myself now. I'm like, right, well, I need to make sure I just ingress that information. I'll try my best to put my, and this is, I sound like such a dickhead, I'll put my clothes in the wash basket, or, you know, like, she'll leave stuff on the stairs and I'll just walk past it every time. So I'm like, what the hell's that doing on the stairs? But understanding that's her subliminal messaging for saying, I'd like that taking upstairs. Because as men, we're very matter of fact, aren't we? To the point, I'm so matter of fact that in our early years of relationship, she'd say, put the kettle on. I'd put the kettle on. And she'd be like, where's my drink? I'd be like, no, you said to put the kettle on. The kettle's boiled.
There'd be so many guys listening to this who'd be like, yeah, that's me. That's,
yeah. Yeah, and you know what? If you've got a good woman that kind of is there and is a homemaker, you need to understand that that is becoming a scarcity. And, you know, yes, we've got Instagram and, we, you know, you can see everything you could have had. But, you know, typically we're all the same kind of, you know, men and women have the similar sort of traits. That's why there's all the books on it. Like, Men are from Venus, Women are from Mars.
Yeah.
You know, and really just understanding where they come from, where you come from. And me and my wife have been through that journey. I've said to her, listen, I'm a guy, like, if you want something doing, you need to say to me, this is what I'd like you to do. If you leave the house and leave me with the kids, please leave me some notes on what time they need feeding, you know? and likewise, I say to my wife, and this is some more content from the likes of Andrew Tate, but it's like, men want respect. And women want love. And that's definitely helped my relationship with my wife, is that, you know, just silly things like when we're in public, hold my arm, you know, you're my woman, you're with me. Those little signs of respect really make me happy. But on the same token, me just giving her little compliments and telling her she's doing a great job with the kids, which she is, and that, you know, that I appreciate what she does at home. Like, it's not easy. Like, I would not swap lives with my wife for a second, but, you know, I know I've gone way off tangent here, mate, but, you know, I think it's important to get out there that really people need to just start looking within more and stop looking out. I think social media's really made us all kind of look outwards, but really you need to look in, see what you've got. And if you are at home with a partner, you know, woman, man, whatever, you know, it's so easy to pick fault with people. But I think realistically, if you can, and I think I'm really good at this in business and in life, of seeing the good in people. I'll give you a hilarious example. There's this rising trend of kind of little chavvy guys nicking motorbikes and stuff. And there was a video emerged from someone in a cafe in my local area, and these kind of kids come along and they're trying to steal this motorbike, and three of them give up straight away. And this one kid's got this rock and he's just smashing the padlock on this bike over and over and over again for like 4 minutes, right? He gets the bike, steals it, goes off, and everyone's like, oh, my God. And I'm like, listen, there is a kid who has proper persistence. And let's say we take that kid, right, and we interview him. We'll probably find he's being negatively programmed from his upbringing. So let's say we dust him off. We've probably got an entrepreneur in the making right there. But people don't look at that as, oh, as a fucking scrot stealing motorbikes. But honestly, that's what I was thinking watching this video of this kid. You know, people were shouting at him and he's unwavered, just crack, crack, crack.
And I think it's so important to, like, recognize that, isn't it? Is that often you'll see this in entrepreneurs and business owners as well, is like the way they view the world is very different. and the way they view people is very different as well. So they'll look at their characteristics and their traits. So I'll give you an example. I was going to make a piece of content around this. I will make a piece of content around this in the future. However, I had a call with someone the other day, right? So slightly different, but I think it's just talking about like our first impressions of people and how we view things differently. I had a call with a guy that I met on LinkedIn. I was aware that he was trying to sell to me, so I entertained the process. I didn't want what he had to offer. He didn't go about it in the right way in like the DMs or anything anyway. However, I entertained it because it was a 15-minute phone call, Zoom call. I recognized straight away, and again, just speaking to how I kind of, my mind is now starting to operate differently, that I could see within the first 20 seconds that this guy lacked confidence. So instantly, couldn't maintain eye contact, was fidgeting all the time, kept taking sips of his water, the way in which he like communicated. And as straight away, I wasn't there to buy anyway, but because I saw this guy lack confidence, I didn't trust him. So that lack of confidence just like permeated out of him. And I was like, I don't trust you. And I don't trust you enough to have any form of like business relationship with you. And it's interesting to see how, as you do your own, you go on your own journey, you do your own growth, you do start to view the world very differently. And that's something I would never have picked up on before, but I almost like acknowledge that within myself now, is that the lens that I look through at the world is slightly different, but I think you can utilize it. And like you say, you can find yourself an awesome recruit. You can recognize that actually people are not inherently bad. They've just been maybe influenced or pushed down the wrong path. And yeah, I think you do become a lot more attuned to almost like soft, you know, you've got like hard and soft skills. It's like hard and soft traits where you can see like maybe what's beneath the surface a little bit.
Yeah. So mine comes from, I'm pretty sure I've got ADHD. It comes through my kids. I've not bothered getting diagnosed, but with ADHD comes kind of being a bit more susceptible to kind of things around you. And I really soaked up a lot of my childhood. And being a parent to me is just another mission. It's like my mission now is to make sure these kids have the best kind of upbringing they can have. And it's not material. It's mental. And just quickly, because I'm not sure how much time you've got, but I was really struggling with my mental health because I was running a business and I was coming home and I had an autistic daughter. We didn't know she was autistic. The system was completely fighting against us. They were actually telling us there was a problem with my wife. They were saying it's her. She's got bad mental health. That's why your kid's like this. Long story. But she would scream and cry all night. We couldn't leave the house because it was I found out much later that autistic, or most autistic people don't like, I forgot what the word for it is now, but it's like change, right? We're going to go from the house to the car. We're going to come from upstairs and downstairs, those things. So it kind of hit our life hard. We couldn't go to the supermarket together as husband and wife because one of us had to stay home. So if we took her, she'd just scream the whole way around. And it was just like, ah. So I was thinking, right, I was shouting a lot because I was tired, stressed, and I didn't know how to cope with it. So I'd shout and bawl because that's all I knew. And I went to the doctors and I said, look, I don't know where to go, but I need some help because I'm not coping very well at home and I don't want to be that dad that constantly shouts at his kids, but I've got no other mechanism. I'm really stressed and I'm just shouting at my kids and I don't want to be that guy. So is there anything you can do? They're like, oh, we'll have a look into it. They called social services and got social services to come and investigate me and my family. So social services were asking my wife if I was beating her, if I was beating the kids, all this stuff, man, just because I asked for some help. And this is the thing why no one dares ask for help. But my wife kind of kicked up a big stink and was like, my husband's come to you for support and this is how you're treating him. But long story short, I ended up on this course and I was the only person there at will. Everyone else was there because they were at risk of losing the kids. And it was the best thing I ever did. And they taught me all about how to make kids feel love, give them attention. And everyone thinks you need to sit down with your kids and you have to be face to face and we are going to do this together. And it's going to, but it's simple things like if your kid's running past you in the house, like just brush the hair, you know, like, oh, I love you, kiddo. You know, those little things, those little nuances, which is what helps program and instill them. And I saw something online that said your inner voice is how your parents spoke to you as a kid. So I really have to catch myself. And like, do you know, like when your kid's done something wrong, you go, "Are you stupid?" I'll say to them, like, "Are you stupid?" I'm like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "No, no, you're not stupid. You're a very smart young person. So why would you do something so silly when you know you're actually really smart? And that's not a smart thing to do." And, you know, and that kind of thing is kind of changing that internal dialogue and constantly telling them that the winners and stuff. But anyways, it's I don't know how I got onto that. So forgive me, but I used to really kind of look at my upbringing, and I was a bit bitter, you know, and a bit kind of angry about the lack of kind of warmth and love and things like that. And I used to be really kind of like pissed off about it. But then obviously as I kind of became a better person, became a parent myself, I kind of got to know my parents. And I sat down. I was like, "Look, I don't know you. I don't know who you are. I don't know your upbringing." And then I found out they actually sheltered me from so much. And the reason I don't have much family is because they cut us away from them. And then you start to understand, well, actually, my parents were the way they were because of the way they were brought up. So I think when you start to get into that mindset of if someone's kind of with an ass towards you or kind of doing things you don't like, you've got to ask the question is how have they been programmed to be like that? I think when you start to come to look at the world through those lenses, things get a bit easier. I suppose it's just understanding at the end of the day. But little example, postman comes into my office with the post and he was just miserable as hell. He kind of threw the post on the side and was like, you know, not really responding. And I said, "Are you having a bad day, mate?" And he went, "Oh, yeah, man, I'm having such a shit day." I was like, "Right, put your back down. Sit down. I'm going to make you a drink. So you're not leaving until you've had a cup of tea." He's like, "Are you sure?" Yeah, I sat down. Told me all about the shit he's got going on in his world. I kind of give him a little bit of reassurance. I was like, "Look, mate, you know, don't carry it around with you. Just deal with it, you know." And he walked out my office so, like, elevated, like, with a spring in his step. And we're all so quick just to kind of lose that interaction about, "Oh, dickhead, you know, oh, how miserable was he?" But if you just stop and ask someone, "Are you all right? Are you okay?"
It seems so basic, doesn't it? It seems like such a basic interaction. But I think, like, as we draw this to a close, it's an important point to note is that we're almost losing that level of interaction, that level of human touch, because everything does seem to be so faceless and so distant due to a big part of it being social media. And it's always them versus us. And that's a dynamic that we're often creating just in the world in general, man. But look, we could sit and we could chat about this
we could.
For hours and hours.
Can I summarize then? So traits that will help you get to success: self-awareness, persistence and determination, be your own biggest critic, know when to rest, and not just work on making money, but work on your mental and physical health.
Nice. Amen. Completely agree with all of those. And I think they're really great take-home points for people to leave with and to, like, use those as mental models, use them as frameworks and principles for them to go out in the world and start to actually make a change to their own life. Because as we've made a point of today, is that action is what alleviates anxiety. Action and commitment is what's going to change your life. So it's been an awesome conversation today to hear about your powerful journey, mate. It's been one whirlwind of a journey for yourself, but I appreciate you hopping on here today. Where can people find more of you?
I'm going to start kind of being a bit more professional on social media, but I do use Instagram a lot. I think it's at KieranMH92, I believe. LinkedIn's a big one. Look, I just like connecting with people. I want to be known for the connector of people and an entrepreneur, you know. So I love connecting with people, finding out what people do. And if I can connect dots, I love making introductions. But again, if you just want to be around, if you want to get to know people and be around people who are just a bit normal, really, and want to push you to do better, then connect.
Awesome. I'll put all of that in the show notes as well for everybody to access. But appreciate your time today, mate. It's been awesome.
Sweet. Thank you. Take care, Jack.
And you, man.
Guys, I appreciate you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did and you found it valuable. To make sure you don't miss an episode like this in the future, hit that subscribe button. But until then, take ownership, take action, and keep hustling.